Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks,
welcome to another edition of Done
Right.
I am Thank you for being here with me today. I hope Saturday, depending on the country, Tell me, was this or not? You need it this time around, even though it's more than a Supreme Court. More than but still, I named it. What? I named it. The Supreme Court giveth, and the Supreme Court taketh. The Supreme Court giveth, and the Supreme Court taketh. What do you guys think? Anyway, I have my tweet deck open that I can talk to you via Twitter as well. Remember, my Twitter is at Egberto Willis, at Egberto Willis. You can reach me there. You can also reach me at 646-929-2495. I promise to always be nice to you. I promise to always be respectful to you. Whether we disagree or not, give me a call, 646-929-2495. This is a fact-based show. We don't go into the little shenanigans that you hear from other shows that really try to, you know what. Anyhow, before I start reading my blog, I want to apologize for not being here last week, but I think I gave you fair warning. I thought I would have had a sub, but things didn't quite work out the way they should. This was an interesting week. It was a long last week. My daughter, as you know, got through college here in Texas. And she started her medical program in San Diego. So what did we do? We packed up the entire cart, or rather U-Haul. She, watching your daughter drive a U-Haul, my God, I was impressed with the young lady. Anyway, she drove the U-Haul from Austin to Houston, and we took the U-Haul from Houston to San Diego. I did the driving to San Diego because I wanted to get there fast. We were driving at 80 miles plus an hour, and I didn't want her pulling a load that kind of speed. But we got there quickly, fixed her up, and as soon as I got to California, had to head off to San Jose, California for Netroots. Had a wonderful Netroots. I learned a lot, made a lot of connections, connected to quite a few people. It was simply wonderful, then just came back here to Houston on Sunday. But I tell you what, Monday was the day, Tuesday was the day, all these results from the Supreme Court. But most, I tell you, being in Texas, the thing that turned me on the most, the thing that gave me hope, the thing that gave me the most hope throughout was to watch the movement that is growing in Texas. Watching the movement grow in Texas. Wendy Davis wasn't the genesis of the movement per se, but on Tuesday, she became the encapsulation of Texas freeing itself from the shackles of a party that has done nothing positive in the state. The state, while looks business friendly from afar, has been doing it on the backs of the poor, the migrant worker, health care. We are the worst off in quite a bit, both educationally and medically. And to watch the women of Texas stand up and say, no more, no more. You know, it's always, men can get mad, but don't get women mad. Don't mess with women's children. Don't mess with that which makes a country, the woman. So while it was encapsulated, and I stayed up till 3 in the morning watching the news feed. I think the news feed went down at something like 2:30 in the morning. And of course, I had to write a blog about this event. But in writing the blog, I was so excited because there were a lot of women from the Kingwood area, Democrats that were out there in the galleys. There were a whole lot of women from the Battleground, Texas, that were out there. There were a lot of women from the Blue Bonnets out there. There were a lot of women, just a whole lot of women from these different organizations. One could not be prouder. But I tell you what, folks, guess what? In as much as Wendy Davis won, in as much as Wendy Davis was able to get to prevent that bill from being passed, Governor Rick Perry, he called yet another expensive special session. We must remember this stuff couldn't pass during the regular session using regular order. It couldn't pass. So he used special session, the special session with special rules to get it passed, or to attempt to get it passed, and Wendy sculled it. On Monday, he starts a new 30-day session. And you know what, folks? We will be in Austin on Monday. There is going to be people from all corners of Texas converging on Austin on Monday. Yours truly, Egberto, expects to be there, and I will attempt to live cast the event directly onto my website, egbertowillies.com. So if things work out, I got some batteries and all that kind of stuff with the expectation that I can live cast the event directly to the website. Of course, you know that that many people out there, we may have some communication problems, but I will try my best. Without further ado, let me go ahead and read you the blog that I wrote that night right after the event. But folks, please remember, call in number 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. You can also reach me via Twitter at Egberto Willies. You can reach me at Twitter at Egberto Willies, and I'll be following that as well. But here it goes. I titled the blog post, Wendy Davis Rescued Texas Women as State Republican Senators Take Abortion Rights Away. Why are we fighting this battle again? Why? You know, my friend, before I read the blog, the publisher of Daily Coast wrote a book a few years ago called The American Taliban. And I read that book, and all I could do as I read that book was, man, the similarities are really there. The similarities are really there between the right wing, the policies they promote, and the Taliban. We don't want to say that because it sounds uncivil. We don't want to say that because how can Americans be spounding policies that sound congruous to the Taliban? Is that really possible? Well, folks, please make the analogy. Read. Read the policies. There's a lot that these guys do behind the scenes. For those of us that are following it every day, we see it. We hear it. But most people are so busy they're working. They have things to do. They have children to take care of. They don't have time to spend the amount of time that many of us otherwise have to get deep into the politics. They don't. So they don't see that they're being pilfered. They don't see that their rights are being taken away. They don't see all these things. But that's where we come in. That's where we come in. Dear listeners, that's where you come in. Because you're not going to see these things on TV, so you are now the source of information. And as long as we keep this great internet open, you are the media. You are the one that is responsible. You are your brother's keeper. And while your brothers don't have the time to do all that they need to do, you are your brother's keeper. You are your sister's keeper. You are your mother's keeper. You are your fellow American's keeper. So, to the blog. Wendy Davis rescue Texas women as state Republican senators take abortion rights away. Will this be the turning point in Texas? Will Republican women join progressive women in Texas to stop the continuous attempt by Republican men to violate them legislatively? Too graphic? Hyperbole? Hell no. I have a wife, a daughter, a mother, nieces, aunts, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, and many other women in my life. Many still reside in Texas. What is happening to women's rights in Texas, specifically by out of touch, out of line, and unempathetic Republican politicians, is a crime against decency, morality, and humaneness. A few weeks ago, Texas Governor Rick Perry vetoed the Texas version of the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. In the 2011 legislative session, the same troglodytes masquerading as Republican politicians passed the Texas Sonogram Law. And I stopped from my blog for a while here. When all these women enslaving policies were being passed in Texas, there was no real media of significance. There was none. While in Virginia, their law that was less than, that was not as bad as our law, was getting all the scrutiny, all the revolt that was going on against their capital was actually shown on TV, national TV, etc. We had the same thing here in Texas. We had the masses out there. We had the War on Women march. Thousands of women showed up. We didn't get hardly any coverage here in Texas to help move the message forward. And folks, Texas is a huge state. But I go back to the blog. Anyone in doubt about the invasiveness of these types of procedures should review this sonogram description, and I put a link to that sonogram description. While the mainstream media gave much coverage to stories on the East Coast, Virginia, and throughout the country, Texas women coverage remains scant as the lawmakers in Texas continued their war on women. And in my post, I show all this information. I showed the video that we did that details the amount of activity we had out here. Folks, today, State Senator, and this means Tuesday, State Senator Wendy Davis fought the valiant fight against the draconian Texas abortion bill, Senate Bill 5. So what does Senate Bill 5 do? Jezebel says it best. A brief reminder of how overwhelmingly explicative this bill is. It would ban abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancies, mandate that clinics complete unnecessary upgrades, require doctors to gain admitting privileges at hospitals, and place new restrictions on medication abortion, meaning Plan B and these other types of things. Abortion advocates say it would close all five clinics in the state. Senator Davis filibustered the bill almost 13 hours. She did not eat, drink, used the bathroom or leaned on any furniture. She stood her ground for 13 hours for Texas women and men. Republicans had to falsely claim her filibuster was not germane to the bill twice and helped with a back brace by Senator Rodney Ellis once to stop the debate when it was obvious she would be able to hold her ground until the session had to come to a close. The state capitol and chamber were filled up with those opposing the bill. The reality is, most Texans oppose this bill. Republicans have never cared about the will of the people anyway, here in Texas, that is, and throughout many of the country. They've only cared about the will of their corporate interests, their failing ideology, and old conservative white men. To hell with everyone else. That's a very tough paragraph there, folks. And for those of you that are listening that are conservative, Republican, or whatever, I urge you to call in, because these descriptions are not descriptions of most of my Republican friends. I have a whole bunch of them. But it's a description of what these folks have, of what some of my friends as well, have allowed their party to become by their willful silence, by not speaking out against the people that are destroying their party, by allowing those people within their party to cause material harm to Americans. 404, I see that you want to speak right after the blog. I'll bring you in, sir or ma'am. So, again, tough paragraph, but my friends, it's not a personal thing, it's a policy thing. And I want to actually hear from many of you who are not necessarily of the liberal stripe that I am, but whom I respect in their conservative values, and join the conversation, because it is you that we need to hear from. And let me go ahead and continue to finish this vlog. Senator Wendy Davis' filibuster was not successful because of Republican fraudulent processes on the floor. They went against the rules of the Senate. Interestingly, the bill was passed after 12 midnight, so theoretically it is invalid. However, rules do not matter in the Republican-controlled Texas legislature. Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst subsequently admitted as much and acknowledged that, in effect, Wendy Davis was successful in blocking the bill with the assistance of multiple parliamentary procedure delays by attentive Democratic senators. Senator Davis ultimately showed progressive Texas how to fight. It took a Texas woman with a steel spine to instill the fear in Republicans of the future at hand. Battleground Texas has started mobilization to turn Texas blue. The Texas Democratic Party is working hard at empowering all Texas citizens. Texas is ready to have Governor Wendy Davis or U.S. Senator Davis lead the way. That's last paragraph, my personal opinion. 404, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Good afternoon, Bobby Rodrigo. Alberto, how are you?
Bobby Rodrigo, talk to me, my brother.
Well, first of all, I was glad to see that you were doing Netroots last week, and we were witness to Nancy Pelosi's speech and the fiascos that happened around there. But let me take this off my Bluetooth very well.
No problem.
You know, I happened to listen to this issue a little bit last night on Mars. Well, and I've been paying attention to it, of course, all week. You know, been getting such high publicity. You know, there are other sides to it, obviously, in giving a little argument from the conservative end that is valid. The standard that they're talking about as far as the medical profession is concerned is a standard that is held in other medical fields. I don't really have a problem with that one per se. But of course, the bigger picture is that we're not getting the truth from the elected conservative. I was happy to hear you talk about the difference, obviously, you know, and I think this is about both parties when I talk like this, because you know my feelings about money and politics.
Right.
It's across the board, of course. It's hard to be anything in this country, have any kind of serious, balanced, fact-based opinion about what I want to see in this country, and when I can't find anybody who supports me or anyone else like me in Washington or even in the state government, it's always about the money. I think that's more of the issue than anything else. I am pretty much committed to the fact that we need to break up the two-party system in our government, period, because it is being controlled to a degree where they're not even letting anybody else in to have a discussion.
Bobby, can I ask you something? I don't want to stop about, but you made a very important point that I think we should explore. So please keep that backstop, that what else you want to say, but I want to explore something very important that you said. And that is, you said that you want us to break up the two-party system, which is something that I am wholeheartedly in agreement with, for, et cetera. Now, I've rattled my brain, and there's some background noise. I don't know what's causing it, but I've rattled my brain, Bobby, and maybe you can help me here. There is such an entrenched two-party system within the rules that it almost seems that you have to infiltrate a party, the party of less that will cause the least damage, systematically infiltrate that so that you can then effect more democracy, that in effect we can get other parties, that in effect the Green Party, the Justice Party, and all these other parties can actually have a say at the table. So what do you think about that? And then please continue with what else you wanted to say.
Well, I mean, and that's exactly what it is. And you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this, either privately or on the air, but I now am a member of Free and Equal, the Free and Equal Election Foundation, that is headed by Christina Tobin. And that foundation was responsible for the third-party debate last year. So the idea, of course, is to break up the two-party system and allowing anybody, everybody, a voice in our, you know, a voice to be heard and to participate in debates and let the public vote. You know, this is also a voting issue. Let the public be able to vote for whoever they want. As most people know, when we were dealing with the debates last year, for example, no one can get through the door. And most of us have seen, anybody who's a little bit older, you know, saw what the situation was when Ross Perot ran. You know, whether you support him or not is not the issue. The issue is that if somebody wants to run and they're qualified and they're on the ballot, then they should be able to participate in the debate. And the only reason why they weren't, well, maybe not the only reason, but one of the only reasons is because of corporate control, and another major reason is because of two-party control. It's all about the money. We're doing an event in October at UCLA called the United We Stand Fest, and Gary Johnson and Jill Stein and a whole bunch of major musical acts like Saving Abel, Smashing Pumpkins, and Ziggy Marley and Nas are all participating. The goal is to make it free to the public, and we're going to bring to the table, and the whole idea of the event is to break the monopoly on the two parties. You know, and the more I see what's going on day in and day out, because, Egberto, you know, you are an objective human being, regardless of your progressive ideology. You know that we're being lied to from both directions. You know that we're being lied to by the 1% media, and you know it's all money-based. And what else are we going to do? We're going to keep going down the same road or hope that we get somebody from, you get somebody on the liberal side that actually has the principle to do it without money influencing them. I defy anybody to name 10 people in Washington, for example, that actually work for their constituents. I don't think it can be done. Even if you give people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul to go right across the spectrum from left to middle to right, or left, low, whatever it is, even if you give those people a say in that situation, and you'd all, if you other, you are hard-pressed to come up with 10, and if you look at the voting records of these individuals, with the possible exception, well, even Elizabeth Warren with her vote with Monsanto, with the, you know, you look at these voting records.
Was that
people,
hurtful or what? That hurt to the
it
core,
was horrible.
I tell you.
Oh, and because that's her, that is totally, it's the same thing when it is exactly the same thing when you look at the platform of the president, some of the things that he has flipped on, not just done, but flipped on. That's exactly what Elizabeth Warren did with that vote, regardless of the reason. They absolutely should have not voted that way. There's no way that she should have supported that act. That act is the Protection Act is absurd. You can rationalize all you want. I'm sorry, it doesn't work. You know, when you're talking about what that company is about, how much influence they have in our country, just our country, forget everybody else. You know, so I say to everybody, you know, who do you support? Okay, so then you go to, they talk about Libertarian Party, you talk about other parties. Absolutely, you should have the choice to be allowed in our elections, in our process, in our access, in our debates, in our media coverage, all of that. So absolutely, we have a problem. And I totally am of the mind now, after all these years now that we've been talking, these last two years, I guess, and my evolution in the coffee party, that for what we stand for, fact-based civil discourse, transpartisan solutions, we're not going to get them with the two-party system that we have. I'm in total agreement with Christina and anybody of a like mind. And just as a side note to that, I'll give you an example of how bad it is. Now, Gary Johnson didn't get access to the debates, neither did Jill Stein.
Now, there are Justice Party and a Green Party, for those who don't know.
Well, no, he's the Constitution Party, isn't he? But regardless.
No, I think it was the Justice.
There were five participants in the third party debate. These two individuals are on opposite of the spectrum as far as ideology is concerned. But the point of them speaking at the United We Stand Fest is because they have something in common. They want access to the debate. Well, when you get to ideology, if you forget the goal, Gary Johnson initially refused to participate in the event because he wouldn't participate in an event with Jill Stein because of the ideological differences. And we're all shaking our heads like, really? You're kidding me. We're talking about you guys promoting something that you both need so you can have an opportunity to lead the country the way you want, but you won't get together, and that's why...
Wait, I'm sorry. Did I hear you right that Gary Johnson didn't want to participate because Jill Stein was going to be there?
That is absolutely correct.
So the only reason he was going down there is that they snubbed him at his own primary then.
Well, I mean, and that's the issue of the event. You know, you can promote your party all you want during the event. You know, everybody gets to this, you know, they get a tent, a table, whatever they're doing. But the purpose of the event is to break up the monopoly, to get rid of the control. So why would you even utter that out of your camp? Because you're being treated the same way, and that's how bad we are at this. That's the place that we've gotten. I was shocked. You know, and I get Gary. There's a lot of things that Gary says that I'm like, you know what? I could support that issue. You know, and that happens a lot. But when you say something to me absurd, because I tell you how I found out about that. I was talking to Christina, and I said, you know, what is the litigation situation right now with this? Because obviously that is, you know, having events and promoting events is not the only avenue to fix this. You go to court, obviously. And this is how it came up. Gary's camp, you know, and of course, mind you, I'm not hearing this myself, so let me put that caveat. I did not hear this out of Gary's camp myself. Credible people told me this. So let me make sure we understand what I'm saying. You know, but this is what I'm being told, and Gary actually is not actually showing up at the event. He's appearing over media, you know. So you could think about that, because you could just hear, well, there's people who support Gary that wouldn't want him in the same place with her, you know. And I'm like, oh, geez, you guys just don't get what we're doing here, you know. And that's our problem. Same thing. The same issue that we have with the coffee party, trying to get people to. We our goal is to fix our society. None of us are going to get all that we want. That's
exactly
how it works. You know, we have to share our society, not in a collective sense. We need to protect our what we want to do individually, but elections are about who wins and who loses. So unless you're taking into account the entire society, if you win, then we have where we are. You know,
you're
then,
so
of
correct.
Course, you have all this money coming in. It's just,
I want
it's
to break
crazy
in one second. Bobby, I want to break in one second, because you said something. You were talking about what the Coffee Party is all about and so forth. And there was some discussion in a thread earlier this week that was really asking, is Coffee Party a progressive organization? And I tried to respond the best I could by first stating no. And then absolutely not. It is a transpartisan organization. And I want Coffee Party to be a transpartisan organization. Why? Look, I'm in a whole lot of different groups, Bobby, right? I'm a political activist. You're a political activist. So we are in a lot of different places. And we have different spaces that we operate out of. When I'm operating out of the Kingwood area Democrats, there I am a staunch Democrat. We work on Democratic specific issues. When I'm at with Move to Amend, we have more of a green slant, but we are a group that is a more activist, in-your-face group for change. When I'm with Coffee Party, I want to keep my values at the same time that I bring other people's values in, just like you do. In other words, so that we can have that soup of ideas that's not directed in one direction. In other words, it is where you actually have a place to mangle ideas, flush out things that another side can check you on. The problem I'm having a whole lot of times, and for all our Coffee Party listeners, I want you to hear this very well. We want you all to engage fearlessly. Conservatives, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Justice, everything. When we say transpartisan, this is the place where we get the transpartisan soup. La salsa is how we say it in Spanish. Esto es la salsa. This is where you put all those things together and you come out with something, and then you can move it on to more of to your ideology. But you need this space. What we need to teach our folk is that strong engagement does not mean if I don't get my way, I run. And I think you addressed that earlier, Bobby.
I agree totally with what you're saying, definitely. And, you know, I guess that for me to make it as simple as possible for other people, hopefully, to get where we're coming from is, number one of the things that we promote the most are common. We want facts in our discussions. Before the discussion starts, we would submit, let's make sure we're talking about the facts. You know, when the 2008 election just started, I'll give an example. I was at, you know, and I it was when I pretty much started to pay attention, because in the construction business, 2008 was when we tanked commercially as far as across the board.
Right.
So my comment to everybody that I was, and I'm in Georgia, so the ideological discussions are pretty, you know, right versus left to a degree.
Yeah.
And my comment to everybody was, I will give you all the ideological arguments you want after we fix the money, because it's affecting us all. So putting aside the ideological social issues, which are the greatest ones, and just going into, we are all affected by unemployment. We are all affected by the tax policies of the country. We're all affected by corporate personhood. And to add on to corporate personhood, that they are not people. You know, so if you think that we shouldn't tax the rich, fine. I don't want to. So let's say we have common ground, and you want to tax the rich. I don't want. I mean, you don't want to tax the rich. I think that the rich should pay a little bit more. But we both should think that corporations should not be people, and they shouldn't get the breaks because they're not people. So, you know, there's another example of how ideological economic issues can come and find common ground. There's so many ways. But we are dealing with the same things every single day. And if we let the 1% media and the polarized people formulate our arguments for us, instead of going to find out the answers for themselves, we're beating ourselves up. And one of the ways I believe to do that is to break up what's going on in the two-party system and let everybody argue. Let everybody have a debate. If you take the third-party debates and you actually watch them and put them alongside, because they ask them the same question. If you put them alongside the debates that the president and the ex-Governor Romney had, and then now you have a broad spectrum of opinion. You know, we have states that are allowing marijuana, for example. You have the Defensive Marriage Act thing that's happened. These great issues, but those are not the only ones that are going on. The Supreme Court in this term alone decided, I only think there was one case where what you could call a non-business entity won. Business won every single time. We're getting hammered from the standpoint all across the board, and they're playing partisan politics. And it's funny how the 1% media talks about, I mean, just the same day as the Defense of Marriage Act decision came out, they overturned the case of a corporate bribery case in New York State. It got no play.
I heard about it, though. I don't know the specifics, but I heard about it.
Well, and without doing this by, I mean, please look up what I'm saying, because I'm sure I'll get something wrong. It's not in front of me. But what happened was is you had a corporate entity trying to bribe a government official into, I believe it was the handling of pension funds, I want to say. And in actuality, the court's ruling is kind of correct. I mean, they're dealing with the way the statute of bribery reads. As far as how, you know, the description of bribery does not cover this particular aspect, or extortion, I think it was, extortion, I'm sorry. The description of extortion in the statute does not cover the elements of this particular crime. So in that aspect of it, I kind of get the ruling. But think about what we're talking about here. We're talking about an extortion act where you have a corporation that is identified. This is all during the Wall Street stuff. Identify going after an official, trying to bribe them into doing something with pensions, and they get caught. And, of course, these people have money, so they can take their case all the way up. They can make their arguments. We don't have people paying, we don't have the watchdogs paying attention. We don't have the right people fighting it to make sure that they're charged correctly, apparently. And this happened the same day. I think that's real important. We've had some, you know, we had there was another out of a Texas. There was a case out of Texas that talked about employment discrimination and retaliation. Again, another decision that was on the side of business, but it wasn't talked about because they talked about these other polarized acts, you know, that are important. Don't get me wrong. The Voters' Rights Act is important. You know, DOMA is exceptionally important. Absolutely. Proposition 8, absolutely. But all of them are. And we're having all this conversation, and meanwhile, business is thriving and killing us and winning every time we turn around, and their interests are looked for every single time over and above what is happening to us. And the ruling,
you know,
on Proposition 8 was
this
great.
Morning I was watching up with, I think, Steve Kornacki and also Melissa Harris-Perry, and I don't remember which one of the shows it was, but it was stated that it's amazing that the Supreme Court, this issue, most of the cases or a large plurality of the cases had to do with business rights. In other words, things that business, you know, for business. And that the docket for next session has the risk of really blowing apart the individual citizens' rights versus corporate rights with a lot of cases that are going forward.
Yes,
it is
completely
and entirely scary. And a lot of people think that Roberts is playing the game very well. In other words, he kind of took some heat from his base with healthcare reform. I don't know why he took heat, because healthcare reform is really another what do you call that, a flowing river for a whole lot of industries. You know,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, the only real businesses that get hurt by healthcare in general are some smaller businesses. I'm not talking about from a healthcare perspective. I'm talking about all those little businesses that. But not only that, there are these little businesses that used to give you things like your diabetic strip or your insulin.
Right.
That, I mean, there was no real purpose for them, right? They were just there to make a little profit on top of what they sold you in a clinic. Claim in service. Those companies are gone. If you look at a new advertisement on TV, this company is proud to come out. I don't remember the name of the company, but it's proud to come out and tell you, hey, 90% of the guys that you used to buy these things from are gone. Now you buy it from me. I'm like,
right.
Oh my God, how do you make an advertising that says that? In other words, healthcare reform came. Go ahead.
No, but when you talk about, for example, our business community, and when you talk, when people talk about this in an ideological way, one of the arguments is, you know, we need to free up regulation so businesses can have less cost in opening up. And I respond to that saying, well, I own a business. I have pretty much my adult life owned businesses. I've owned nightclubs, restaurants. I own a construction company. And I have never been stopped by regulations other than involving, for example, my bathroom needs to be big enough for handicap, which I don't have a problem with.
Right.
ADA, things like that. But I, you know, or I have to, you know, I have to make sure that my building is built structurally sound. And I have a problem with that. It's moronic not to do it. But how do you get past trying to open up a store in today, or a restaurant? Let's use a restaurant. I wouldn't even go to the Walmart store. Let's just go to a restaurant. How do you open up a restaurant today privately when every single block, and people are spending money at restaurants. All you got to do is go to any mall facility or any
right.
mall, look at all the cars, the parking lot. How do you compete against a corporate entity that large that has the advertising budget? Just look at that aspect of it, the advertising budget for each one. When you're just somebody trying to come in with whatever budget you have to open up to serve a good product. You know,
right.
we are being overrun by corporate giants. This has been going on since, well, really since Ronald Reagan, but even before that. I mean, this
right.
has been going on for a long time, probably since the Powell, whatever that thing was called.
The Powell letters where
right.
they had to claim capitalism because capitalism was dying, you know.
Right. Right, and he warned the Chamber of Commerce, and look at where we are. You know, whether you agree with him or not, the fact remains it happened. That's the key here. You don't
right.
have to agree with Powell. You can agree with him. That's fine.
Hey, Bobby,
let's
give a shout out on our show right now. We need to give a shout out. Bobby just mentioned something that is very important, folks. He talks about who can compete against that advertising budget of the Pizza Hut or the Kentucky Fried Chicken or all these big corporations that are fighting with Little Mama's Pizza or My Dear Little Pizza Shop. So I'm going to ask all our listeners here to make a commitment. Yes, we are bombarded with advertising from all these big corporations. But remember, we want to keep things. We want everybody to have a fair share. And for everyone to have a fair share at all in business, in pleasure, in all these things, it also means that we as individual citizens have to take some responsibility. Support your small, individually owned or small company, please. Please go ahead and buy some pizza from that pizza shop that you've never heard the name of before. And just check it out. New flavors. Check out that new
Every community
shop.
Has one.
Yeah,
every community has them, and you know it's where was I? I was in.
You were talking
building,
about.
Build,
yeah,
no, what
about,
I mean is I'm building.
Yes, go ahead.
When I said where was I? I mean where I was thinking about. I was visiting a city recently, and come on, Robert. It was on the border of Tennessee and Kentucky. I'm building a church in Cumberland Gap, Tennessee. And I can't remember the name of the city, but there's a city just north of it where you would go to do anything. You know, they've got the stores there. They've got a Home Depot. They've got a Walmart, of course. I mean, it's where you would go to do business because it's a really small community.
Right.
So I go up there, and the first thing out of my mouth and to myself was, where are all the private businesses? It is a
right.
little town full of big business in this. There's no, the place I went to, I had to go get some construction supplies, was one of the only businesses I saw that was a local business. I didn't go to Home Depot, I went to the construction supply. And you know, okay, I might have paid 50, I bought the PVC pipe, I bought some saw blades. Well, I wanted to give the local guy the business. I mean, he's his local community is giving me business from Atlanta. So I try and do that as much as possible, and I was looking for, it was lunchtime, so I thought I'd grab something to eat during lunchtime, and I'm looking around, and I've got Wendy's and McDonald's, and I don't have anybody local. I got Pizza Hut, and Ruby Tuesday, I think, was there, and there's not a local place, and I'm going, wow, there's a great, because I'm always thinking activists now. They've got me, I'm so mad at what Washington has done and this ideological stalemate that we have, that everywhere, everything I do now, everywhere I go, I am in full activist mode. I want to see what's going on and what's affecting our society. So I drive into this town, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I mean, the town can't be more than 2 miles long.
Right.
And I got the corporate hotels. You know, my guys are staying at a local hotel that's owned by a local company. Now, I don't know if they're corporately owned by somebody else. I haven't looked into it. But they're not called the Days Inn or the Comfort Inn or whatever. You know, they gave me a good weekly rate, and we've been staying there for 8 weeks.
But you know what? So, it's so interesting. I need to say this. What's so interesting is the following, because if you watch CNBC or any one of these companies, right, you would hear them, all they talk about is growth, growth, growth. We all know a company cannot grow 7% every year forever. It has to grow. I mean, it cannot grow. What do you call it? Not intrinsically, but internally. You cannot grow
right.
at 7% per year till kingdom comes. In fact, you must reach a point, and I would say that in an economy, there's nothing wrong with an economy that reaches equilibrium, right? In other words, and this is what capitalists cannot understand. There is nothing wrong with an economy reaching equilibrium, which means it produces what it consumes, and that extra profit is invested right back into the community, and you have a closed, complete cycle, a loop, where everybody is doing fine, and there's no specific growth. This thing about having to have growth continuously means that somehow someone else has to suffer if the economy as a whole doesn't grow at the speed that you want these individual corporations to grow. And because these corporations are growing faster than the growth rate of the economy, it means that you see exactly what you saw in these small communities. You see where if Holiday Inn needs to grow, then after it reaches a saturation point, it has to go into Timbuktu, buy up the local motels, and create one nice spankling Holiday Inn, get rid of all those small businesses, and now it can still show growth. But eventually,
and of course, there's an ideological base, like you talk about, a capitalism ideology that'll say, well, I mean, that's the nature of the free market, and anything else, you know, would be evil or would be.
I need to stop you right there for one reason. One of the things that we are going to have to dispel, we are all human beings. You're a human, I'm a human, all of us here are human beings. For us to relegate the success of some economy to a market is sick. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Listen to what I'm saying. It is sick for us to have some imaginary market determine our humaneness. But we have taught business school that we are going to allow this imaginary market that is supposed to be free, that is supposed to be all-encompassing, to determine how good we are, what we can do. Look out the window. Everybody, look out that window. There are potholes. There are some streets that need fixing.
Uh-huh.
There are buildings that need fixing. And we have an unemployment rate that, if you take the underemployment rate, exceeds 20%.
That's
we
right.
We are saying
20%.
That our current market is a hindrance to the success of a country that cannot do what it needs to do to move forward. And we have a Supreme Court who ties the hands of a government that would attempt to do so. Your call.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, you've heard me say this before. The way we're going, and with the slave wages overseas, and the way that minimum wage is here, and the wage here, in so many fields, the only place that is left to make jobs is government for infrastructure. And as much as I don't have a problem with that myself, I balance it out a little bit by saying, well, geez, you know, why is it impossible to create businesses in our society anymore and hire people? And it isn't about regulation. The hurdle is the corporations. That's the hurdle.
Right.
And like
right.
you mentioned, the Supreme Court tying the hands of individuals trying to work. Listen, I've said this before. I don't pay anybody in my company minimum wage. That is not happening. I'm sorry. Like I've told people a bunch of times, if I give somebody $9 an hour and I don't have anybody on my payroll at $9 an hour, if I do that, then they're only making $18,000 a year. What am
right.
I doing? Okay, so I guess I'm just going to have to charge more. And they said, well, that's the problem. I said, yeah, but you know what? Nobody that works for me is on the safety net. So, no, it's not a problem. Because I should have a less tax burden because these people are not getting paid money from our government. And that's the other part of this that is missed in this discussion. Instead of saying $9 an hour, say or $9.50 actually it is, $9.50 an hour, say $18,000 a year. Maybe that'll get somebody's attention. Because
right.
I don't know of anybody that can live in this country on $18,000 a year unless they're living with their parents. Because you cannot do it. You can't do it and have a car, pay for insurance, have a place to live, renting, forget owning, pay for health insurance, even if you're not forced to because you want to, have a child, be married, buy dishes, buy food, pay your utility bills. People, look at your budget and tell me if you actually can live on $18,000 a year and that's
you can.
Not even what our minimum wage is,
Bobby,
right now.
But I tell you what, remember what I said a few weeks ago? And by the way, I see that Janine is in the room. So, Janine, please feel free to call. You know, I always like to hear your wisdom. So, call on in and let us hear some of your wisdom if you have something to add to the conversation. But, Bobby, what I wanted to tell you is that remember, I always say, you know, we get on to this talk, and you've said so many good things that we needed to hear, and we discuss a lot of things that needed to be said. But we are not a show to sit down and simply cry about what they've done,
right.
done to us
right.
or what's happening.
You and I don't just cry. You and I
right.
want to do something. I'm doing
and
something.
That's what I'm saying. And that's why you gave direction, my brother. That's where I was going now. You gave direction. You actually put something out there about that actually brought on my little monologue as far as folks please buy local. But I want to not only buy local, but buy from your individual local business person. But the other thing I wanted to come out and say is, folks, I believe. In free market, in a free market economy that is socially responsible. Why am I saying this? I am saying this because I want folks to go out there and remember, in a free market, you have the ability to choose who you buy from, and you have the ability to choose who you're going to support. So we are not complete, in as much as what I've said before, what Bobby have been speaking about is sort of difficult to hear, in that, wow, corporations are just taking the market away from us or whatever. We have to remember one thing. They can only take the market away from us if we buy from them. There are two ways they can force that. They can force that by being the only person in town, meaning being the only hotel in town where you have no choices, or by using advertising to force you to go to encourage you to go to them. Henceforth, this is why we ought to take things into our own hands and start preaching or start acting out like individuals and start supporting those who can actually circulate our money among all of us and not just migrate it out to Switzerland or migrate it out to the Caribbean where it can never be taxed and be recirculated into our economy. And I have a special message for my dear friend, Mike Cisak. I see you in the chat room, my dear brother. And let me tell you, you disagree with me a lot on the Facebook page because you tend to see what I write. And let me tell you, my brother, we are going to disagree for a long time, but eventually you will be in the fold. I promise you. because you're a very smart young man, and you will, in the long run, understand all that we're talking about. I have a lot of respect for you, and not only do I have respect for you, thank you for calling into my, well, for following a lot of my writings, even though you give me hell, my friend, but thank you, because I don't want the choir. I want to be tested. I want the things that I write about to be tested, and you do a good job of it. Unfortunately, you're not usually right, but you do a very good job of making me do things and check things out, because you come up with some very good information, my friend. You really, really do. So, Mike, sometime you must actually not write, but call into the show as well, my brother. And I see 518 is hot. 518, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, Gloria, Joe Pomponia up in Albany, New York. Welcome
Joe Pomponia, hey, how you doing, my brother?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Good show today. I'm enjoying this.
Well, yeah, you guys always make me, you guys always force us, not my show, you force us to have a good show. Even Mike Cisek giving me a little bit of hell in the chat room makes this show a good show. But anyway, what you got to tell me, my brother?
Okay. Money and politics, sorry, root of all evil.
Totally.
I can put it simply that way. In dealing with the economy, overall economy, I've got to take your side, with the exception that if government is going to have a hand in it, you need an honest government.
Yes.
And I think, I think that might be part of what Mike is missing. Okay, at the moment now, what I've been observing for 5-10 years is a corporate takeover of this country. They give me the impression they want to own us. I posted a piece, I believe it was on Enough is Enough, about a survey a company tried to write. And they sent out questionnaires to all these corporations and multinationals. They got, I think, a 1% answer rate. When they contacted multinationals, the multinationals stated to them they have no interest specifically in any country. Their interest is in profits to be given to the shareholders. When you have people like that, and they want tax breaks from us, and they're not American companies. Their certificates are being held here, but they're not. Okay, they have no interest in how many people might be unemployed here, about creating jobs here. The only thing that they seem to be looking for is a way to make more money, and if they have to subvert laws, bribe people, they don't want people to know about it, so they'll, finagle laws, they'll hide behind things, and they get away with it. But they have American held, they're corporate offices are here. Now, I come back to the same thing again. If they're persons, why can't they be prosecuted at the corporation itself and let them go to their shareholders and explain it? I bet that a law like that would be so detrimental to them, they wouldn't dare. Of course, getting a law passed would be impossible.
You are so right about that. But, getting that law passed is not impossible. You remember earlier Bobby was talking about getting rid of the two-party system, right? I have thought this stuff. I have thought this stuff through for several years. I've had young people, older folk, try to tell me, we have to do that. For which, I'm not going to argue that point. I mean, I think it would be great if we didn't have a two-party system. In the activism that I do, my goal is incremental, and 908, I see that your hand's up. I'll come to you right after this. Is incremental results that actually, and not pie in the sky. So that's one of the reasons I think we believe in, and I imagine Bobby is the same as well, working with these several organizations, because like viruses are only killed off for a long time when they're being hit from many directions. I think that's what our body politics is. Our politics going to require.
I want to say something on that. What you just said.
Sure, Bobby. Go on in, and then I'll bring 908.
let me tell you where I'm at with this two-party system thing, and I've thought about this for a long time. I believe that when a person goes into a voting booth in order to make this the right way, that Republican and Democrat shouldn't even be, or independent or anything else, shouldn't even be listed next to their name in the voting booth. And let's eliminate the ideology from the actual vote, and let's make it of substance. Remove the party titles totally, the solidarity, all of that stuff, and let's make it about what the individual is doing for his constituents and for the country individually. And maybe we can make some headway that way.
That, let me tell you, you're not going to get an argument from here either. Let me get to, and first of all, that was prescient, and I hope folks listen to exactly what he said there. That thing about the ballot and not having the party affiliation means that you could use the words of that politician without the filter of a party to decide if he will represent your values. Thank you very much for that, Bobby. Let me throw 908. 908, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, John from Jersey. How you been?
John from Jersey. How you doing, buddy? Second time I'm hearing from you this week.
Yeah, I called your other show Tuesday night or whatever it was.
Well, thank you. You were actually very good on that show, John. Thank you very much for participating. You brought up some issues that we needed to talk about.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you much. I think it was Robert. I guess he's a great.
Yeah,
point,
Bobby,
you know.
Rodrigo. Yes.
Oh, Bobby, or who was the other one who made the other point?
Joe Pomponio.
Okay, Joe. You know, the thing would be great if you could have that. You know, to where there was only the, you know, no representation of Democrats or Republicans. But I don't, that'll never happen. But it would be nice. But it'll never happen.
Let me stop you there, Joycey. John. Let me stop you there. Okay. We are going to have to stop that type of – it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a lot of engagement. But let's try – and I'm asking this from all of us. Let's try and go from the premise that we are American citizens, and that if we, meaning you, Joe, Bobby, all the listeners, over time do our job – we will actually make that statement that you just made false, which I know you want to make that statement false.
But within, how can you? They control, and then they won't legislate it that way, so it'll never happen. They gerrymander their way. They make sure that Democrats and Republicans still exist, but both. You know, they try filter out even others besides them. You know, besides trying to clash against each other, but they make sure at least that they stay in power. You know.
We can't legislate.
We can't legislate.
No, but our goal is, John, with all the things that we talk about here, is not to just leave here and say, oh, they done beat us, but to leave here and say, okay, what am I going to do next? And you know what? The lovely thing that I see here from all our listeners, actually, you inclusive, is that we're not just working here or talking here on the radio. But it's amazing that Bobby can come and tell me stories, Joe can come and tell me stories, and just about every caller can come and tell me stories. Hey, guess what I saw? Guess what I did? We're actually working within the politics, and maybe working slowly, but we're doing what it's going to take. And it's not a sprint, as we say. It's a marathon. It's a marathon. So anyway.
You know, John raises a point. That obviously is right in front of our face. Let's not. I mean, I agree with you. We got to stay positive and active, but he does raise the reality of what we're dealing with and how hard of what
Absolutely.
We're dealing with is, and how committed we have to be. You know, if you look at just what's going on in North Carolina, which is now, I mean, the last Monday, it is building. We all should be watching what's going on in North Carolina because it is going over.
Before I forget, let me tell the coffee party. Hold on a second, Bobby. I want to tell the coffee party audience this. Our esteemed two founders are out there every Monday filming that for Stories of America. I think their program is
Story
called Stories
of America.
Story of America. They're filming that. And a little backstory, and then I bring you back in, Bobby. And then, Janine, I'm going to come to you. A little backstory is I went to Netroots. I was at a mixer. And this person at the mixer started to tell me, oh, you know, they're taping, about the commotion that's occurring in North Carolina. And she's working with the group in North Carolina who's doing all these protests with Reverend somebody. I don't remember his name. Reverend Barber. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm aware of that. In fact, the president of Coffee Party and the founder of Coffee Party are out there every day videoing that. And she said, oh, really? I have never seen them. And I said, oh, yeah. She said, but there is a company that's out there filming this stuff. And I said, who's that? And I said, then before she could answer, I said, you're probably talking about Story of America. She's like, yes, you know them. I'm like, yes, Eric is the president of Coffee Party, and Annabelle is the founder. And she was so excited that she was making contact with somebody in the Coffee Party who had some sort of a thing to do with this movement as well in North Carolina. I was happy to see that there are all kinds of movements that right there at Netroots, there was a genesis of like 3 or 4 movements. She was ecstatic. It was her first Netroots, and she actually saw activism in her community, came to the group, and saw that this was a seedling for these types of activities.
But you guys are trying to break down Citizens United, and that's going to be tough enough, you know?
It is. Yes, it is,
that's
my
friend.
That's
going to be tough enough. That one may be that could happen. But the
right.
other one, the one that you're talking about, I can't see it happening.
Personhood is going to be tough, but let me bring Janine in. Janine, you're hot.
Well, thanks.
In both
Taylor,
ways.
Well, he's got eyes for you, Janine. What can you say?
Hey, Gretchen is the most excellent dude. So, the whole money in politics issue has become so obvious to me everywhere. It's kind of like, you know, you go out, you shop for cars, you find the perfect car, you pick the perfect color, you know, and then you drive off the lot with your new car, and all you see are cars exactly like yours. And so now, once I came to the place where I saw that money in politics was like the premier issue in America today, that it was the force driving, if you're sitting on a fence, it was the force that's going to push you to one side of the fence or the other, you know, and that it ran contrary to the America I envision, then that's all I see now. It's all I see, and I can look anywhere. I can look to Citizens United. That one's pretty obvious. I can look to the I'm afraid I can look to the Supreme Court and see it. You know, I found a great graphic the other day. It wasn't the current court, but the court before the most recent retirement and appointment. And they had, you know, justices in their NASCAR robes. It will define us. When we go back in time, you know, 50 years from now, when we look back, we're going to see this as the issue of our time. And so I always seek optimism, and so I look for what is possible. So even though some things may not seem possible, I think we need to be turning this Titanic and always keep in mind that, if the Titanic had started turning a little sooner, it never would have hit that iceberg. And the iceberg of democracy destroyed beyond repair is what I am trying to avoid.
So true, Janine. So I mean that is perfect. I mean, I tell you what, for this is also for John to hear. You know, John came on to our Move to Amend program on Thursday, and he was listening to the things that we were doing, both trying to fight against corporate personhood and both corporate personhood and move and money in politics. And what I forgot to tell John during that during our talk was that at the very time we were talking, or a little before we were talking, not only was Move to Amend being not only did some of our principals of Move to Amend attend what we call a constellation meeting in Washington, D.C., where they were with Public Citizen, Root Strikers and all these other groups that are working on the same thing to create some sort of directionality.
Yes.
They were over there working together to say, look, working together in a whole bunch of different groups with different demographics, with different groups of people, we can actually start. And I love the way you said it, Janine. Turn the Titanic. If that Titanic would have had to be turned a lot further out, because it has to be turned slowly. And moving it, turning
right.
America is going to be glacially slow, but you have to start somewhere.
Well, if anybody can move the Titanic, it's the generation that built it. Because
Amen.
We are the ones that are responsible for
yeah.
this mess.
You
and,
are so right, Bobby.
We certainly should know how to fix it.
You're right, Bobby. And you know what, Bobby? That's what we got to do. That's what we
hey.
Got to do.
Hey, can I ask you something?
Sure. Go ahead, John.
How do you feel about Edward Snowden? Or how does anybody here feel about Edward Snowden? Do they keep taking this notion of, you know, let him run and make sure he doesn't get, you know, prosecuted, you know?
I don't want to stay too
or,
long on the Edward Snowden show, but since
yeah,
you brought up
either.
The question, but
yeah.
still you brought it. But since you brought up the question, I'll just ask each one of the callers to give a quick response to you. I think that's fair, because I think that plays a little bit into government as well. So, Bobby, give a quick thing on – just a quick one. I don't want to stay on it, though.
Well, as far as the law is concerned, Mr. Snowden broke the law. As far as the information that he released, I already knew about it. It's been talked about since the Patriot Act was created. It actually has been talked about since 1978 and the FISA court was created. I think that our media uses it as a distraction. I think that
Amen.
He should be arrested and prosecuted for breaking the law. And I think what the government is doing with the Patriot Act and FISA, I have been against from day one.
Thank
yeah,
you.
You know
I
the,
love your
you
response.
Know the truth?
Hold on,
you know the truth
hold on, John. Hold on, John. I'm going to bring you back in, but I want Joe Pomponio to come in. And Janine, I'm going to set your phone after all because it had a lot of background. I'll put you in when the answer comes in. Joe, what do you think?
I totally agree with Bobby. I could only add to it that while the jury is still out, he is a private employee contractor of a private corporation. This is not a government issue. It's a corporate issue. Personally,
oh,
he's got
man.
More out there than the U.S. government.
I'm going to come to you next, Janine, but I want to address Joe. Joe, you actually address exactly what I blogged about. In other words, Bobby is right. He broke the law. Number two, that a private corporation had that amount of power within our national security is appalling. And number three, the media has used this to really – actually, it wouldn't even surprise me if this is a government plant to some extent, because who's really talking about the surveillance issue as opposed to talking about Snowden? We're not talking about the real – what Bobby is concerned about. We're talking about the whereabouts of Snowden. That's shameful. Janine?
Am I live?
You're live.
Okay, great. So this is a very interesting one to me. I had a show about this myself a couple of weeks ago because my first response to this whole deal is, where have all you people been? This has
Thank
been
you.
Going on for a long time.
Yeah,
why, does it take, why does it take this latest, you know, Carmen Santiago kind of where in the world is Mr. Snowden for us to remember that this has been going on for more than a decade? And that the president inherited this, and he may or may not be using it the way it was used before. But I promise you, my understanding of what was happening during the Bush administration and actually happened to me, you know, was much worse than this. So, you know, I have a little bit of, like, what's really going on that this is supposed to cover up, you know? But the second thing for me is the comment about contractors. I have been a government contractor. I worked for multinationals, middle management in multinationals that did this kind of work. And, of course, you can contract for anything and everything. And the original notion was if you need a special talent that's outside the core mission of the government, then, of course, it makes sense like it would for any business to look elsewhere for that pool of expertise, right? Well, it's just become a government contracting has become a huge joke. And it's like businesses spring up just because laws are passed. You know, so the wealth builders move their cash into the latest opportunity to take tax money and turn it into profit. They don't necessarily have experience. They don't necessarily have anything. They just have the money to get in. And then once they're in, it's their job to troll the waters of federal business opportunity and to, you know, make it theirs. And with the challenges with government hiring, there's been no choice. I mean, all this is a, you know, they talk about how weird it is to use taxes to redistribute wealth. Well, all government contracting is redistributing function, government function, from the public sector to the private sector at a much higher price.
And thank you. That's the magic word you said, at a higher price. Sorry for interrupting you, Jenny.
Excellent. But I'll stop there because I know you just wanted a few minutes. But I just think this whole subject is weird. The one thing I do want to say, though, Egberto, is that President Obama came into office saying the leaks are going to stop. And the motivation for saying the leaks are going to stop had to do with ridiculous things like the woman at the New York Times that convinced everybody that there were weapons of mass destruction because of quote-unquote leaks from within the White House. And
right.
All that was planted info. The other best example of this is the whole Valerie Plame scandal, where leaks inside the White House caused tremendous upheaval in not only Valerie Plame's personal life, but in 30-year operations within the CIA. And it was spiteful and it was mean. It reminds me of some episode where you could get Tony Soprano to murder somebody by leaking the gossip that somebody had done something against his family.
Right.
So the whole the fact that the President of the United States doesn't appreciate leaks should not be an automatic trigger. Now, if things are being withheld, if organizations are out of control, you know, I mean, there are times for whistleblowers. I adore whistleblowers. But, you know, sorry, all these congressmen that said they had no idea this was going on are just plain lying to you because I happen to know.
Well, you shouldn't be allowed to leak the memo that says we don't want to have memos leaked. Because that's exactly what happened.
I hear you, Bobby. Okay, let me let John, since John got us on this tangent, John, you got to close this little topic out.
Yeah, I mean, but I absolutely believe they're traitors regardless. You know, there's you know, we have a general right now who's a traitor. We have Snowden. He's a traitor. And we have Manning, and he's a traitor too, and we can't just say, oh, because, you know, somebody started in the press to feel sorry for Manning, then every espionage case or every leak case, it's like it's okay, it's not okay, and I think they've infiltrated, they've infiltrated this thing now, and I think maybe it's via the Chinese. Because they've infiltrated it politically, so we've got firebagger liberals who always go against Obama on everything, including this thing with Manning, and then we've got libertarians of free these people. The Rosenbergs were killed over this. Okay?
Executed,
okay. And actually, the truth is the amount of information that this gentleman leaked. Now, it's not really true. Stuff that we know. Yeah, that's what he told Greenwald, okay? He told pretty much, even a little more than the public knew, okay? And the public got alarmed more than anything, okay?
Okay,
he got them alarmed. But let me say this. He actually did accordingly give the Chinese the actual database information, which was actually worse than the Rosenbergs, exception – you know, okay, it was a nuclear device, but as far as the amount of things that he had given away, it was tremendous. It was the greatest leak probably ever as far as information, and it's massive, and it's dangerous.
Let me just for the record, let me just tell our audience, I get what you say, John. I don't know for a fact how much or what he gave to the Chinese. If you know otherwise, you can source it.
I heard they said it's really, really bad. The leak is worse than that's why they're after him. And the thing is, they can't go after him like uniform military code justice, like Manning and this general, if they're going to go after
right,
the general.
Because he's a contractor. It's, but anyway,
right,
I don't
they're
want
gonna
to
go after him with capital espionage.
You're right. I don't want to.
Yeah,
go,
you know. Let me,
to...
Alberto, before you close this subject down, let me just say this.
Okay, go, Bobby.
What John is saying is really, really important. I think it's an area you need to highlight, because what he's talking about is the responsibility of our intelligence community, and even Janine hit on it, on how ridiculous it can be. He really is bringing out something that we need to, as a society, understand. You know, yeah, the Big Brother argument and all of these things that the media formulates, and then, of course, it's polarized because of the color of the president, I believe. That's my own personal belief. It is
right.
And a way to undermine a party thing, again, my own personal belief. But putting aside that, he absolutely, in my view, is right. I mean, this needs to be highlighted for what it is. It is somebody who is releasing private information about the way our government operates when it comes to intelligence and protecting us. Right, wrong, or indifferent.
Right.
Holding him to standard is different, but what he's saying is true. You know, the way that they're going after Manning is right. Manning is swore to do his job. I took the same oath that I did in the military. And I'll tell you this, just real quick. When I went to A school in Norfolk, Virginia, at the Fleet Combat Training Center Atlantic, when they had NCIS agents at the time called NIS agents in the Enlisted Man's Club asking us questions about what we learned in our A school, because at the very beginning of the book, it tells me as soon as I walked in that building, I had secret clearance. And then everything went up from there. And they were there to test me while I was drinking a drink in the Enlisted Man's Club. So he is absolutely right.
Yeah, you know what the thing is? Now, between China, United States, and Russia, the talks have broken down. This is really, really serious stuff. The Chinese spy on us, and we spy on them. And what no people realize, or, you know, the go free Manning or whatever, free Manning, what's his name? This costs us taxpayers dearly. Classified information to them is costing us taxpayers dearly. It's a fiscal thing too, and it could break down our network
economy?
Overseas.
Okay.
Our overseas networks. Which are very costly to us taxpayers. And you know what's the worst thing about this thing? He admitted that it was premeditated. He admitted that it was premeditated.
Now,
that part
is scary. That part is scary. And what concerned me about that is that he actually made it through what is a lenient contractor method of getting clearance and all that kind of stuff. That was the shameful part of it, I think.
Yeah, and let me say with Manning, because everybody before, years like within the past few years, Manning, free Manning, and all this and that, okay? I don't know if he was punished or not, you know, or beat up or this and that, but that could be like people who his friends. He had a lot of friends who were doing that because he's gay, okay? So now the thing is with Manning, okay, is that he did it. He's a traitor. He did it because of a DADT, okay? Don't ask, don't tell. He did it for that reason, and because of DOMA, okay, stuff that was going on in the country. These are not reasons to leak our secret classified information, no matter what. So he didn't do it. He didn't do it for us. He did it for his selfish reasons, as did Snowden.
I got you, John. Now, you see, folks, what I want you to see that I follow exactly what I've always said. When my callers tell me that the show needs to go somewhere else, they're in command, and it goes. So they thought that this subject needed more exploring, and that's exactly what we did, more exploring. So can we get to immigration now, or do you have more to say about this, any one of you?
It's interesting that John brought this up because it is, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about when I mentioned the oath earlier and about my own classification when I was in the military. I mean, my job was war. You know, everybody can look up. I was an operations specialist in the United States Navy. We work in the combat information center of a ship, which is where war is done, conducted.
Right.
Which is where we use a device called the identification of friend or foe, where we use ASW and electronic warfare and sonar and what I know how fast things go. I know how powerful things are. I know the distance of how things are shot. I know what our capabilities are, because I had to be able to turn around and tell my commanding officer or the CO what was coming, where it was going, how we're going to protect ourselves and our country, and the ship I was on, how we're going to get our ship in between the aircraft carrier behind us and the missile that's going to hit it unless we hit it ourselves. You know, mm-hmm. these things are top secret. And if I would have went, for example, in A school, right out of boot camp, and sat there and let an NIS agent doing his job to find out, if there's anybody, because I guarantee you, he goes back and makes a report and says, well, this guy is not somebody that's going to run his mouth, so maybe he could be, here's an aspect of him going up the clearance chain that would be safe. I mean, it's another part of it. They do all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean they're trying to, now they've got an aircraft carrier which they are trying to get as sophisticated as we are, and they're trying to figure out how to be as sophisticated with us with an aircraft carrier. And then, but when what comes the day when they have enough money to create forces like we have? It's a dangerous situation, and people don't realize that.
Yeah, and they have been discussing that. And actually, it's something I monitor, because of course there's been some press, especially in alternative media, for example, about the capabilities of one of these particular missiles that they have, that's what they call a carrier destroyer, and mm-hmm. and they're nowhere near capable of messing with us on that regard. But that's not the point. Your point is absolutely valid. The fact is that I'm sure they have smart enough people to develop something that will, in fact, be able to undermine our systems if they're being told what our systems are. Absolutely. So, and the same thing with the Manning aspect. I get all the push for it, but really, people, I'll submit this to everybody. One of the reasons why we're falling for a lot of this stuff, for the Snowden and the Manning that John is describing, is because the only people that we care about from the media and from our polarizing politicians are terrorists. We're not even a country who fight us with pea shooters and have absolutely no organization to the aspect of China and Russia does. So really, what the president is doing to defend him just a little bit in these fronts is the right way to go. And as far as the terrorists are concerned, I am so less not concerned about terrorism than I am about what John is describing, because that is the real threat to our safety as a country, not as mm-hmm. our safety as an individual incident, which is completely different.
And there have only been 9 espionage charges ever since 1917, since the law has been enacted, and 6 of the 9 are now. 2 were the Rosenbergs, and I think one was that gentleman who gave away the Buyu sonar system down.
That's correct.
Down,
that's correct.
Right? And 6 of the 9 are being now prosecuted within this administration.
That's correct. And correct. So he's actually doing the right thing.
He's doing his job. Wow. Okay.
Right. And a lot of and just real quick on that, I have issues with the president on some of these things that I mentioned it earlier. But when it comes to I sit there and listen to the shows or whatever, and I hear how they talk about what is his foreign policy. Well, I'll tell you what his foreign policy is. His foreign policy is about it's about what he's doing here. No, you can't go run around and telling our secrets to anybody else. Yes, we are going to be the mightiest nation in the world. And I don't care what anybody says about it. So in that regard, I defend him. And that's why they were talking about, well, it was kind of buried that, they were trying. He was trying to make himself look good on security with this issue with this general. No, that's not the case at all. The Department of Justice is unraveling what has been happening. And that's why this general was notified officially that he's being investigated. And so they're doing their job in that aspect. The other subjects are different. What they're doing with FISA and my feelings about the Patriot Act have nothing to do with this at
all. And the one thing with him, he's only going to get about 25 years in jail. He's 10, 10, and 5 for theft, okay?
Right.
And people are like, oh, free him, and this and that, let him run, and this and that. There could be more damage. Other countries could get that information. And 25 years is nothing compared to what the Rosenbergs had gotten. And it's like as if we're going to use, some drone to kill him. No, we want to bring him to rightful justice. We've got drug dealers who would do more time than 25 years, and they were worried about this guy doing 25 years in jail? I mean, are people insane?
He's not coming back.
Well, they'll get him somehow, one day or the other.
I think Booz Allen will have more to do with that than the U.S.
Our intelligence community is going to go after him like no other, and they'll get to the point where
I want
to
hear Joe. I want to hear Joe Pomponio's opinion on when you said what he thought about his not coming back. Go ahead, Joe.
He's got more to worry about through Booz Allen, and I forgot the third name of the corporation. We've contracted this stuff out to private corporations. I don't know how many. I haven't gotten to research it yet. These people stand to lose $8 billion a year plus whatever is coming in their future. Right?
That's how much Booz Allen got, $8 billion a year?
That's a great point. That's a great point.
I hadn't read that.
That's a great point.
And these guys have shareholders, okay? They all, the research I did, most of them have George W. Bush, Dick Cheney backgrounds, okay? That would mean Halliburton, okay? He's ruffled the wrong feathers. Now, I mean, I grew up, my father was Italian, my mother was Sicilian. She told me stories, okay? You don't.
Hey, don't laugh. There's a difference. To we Italians, there's a difference.
These guys are going to be upset. And, you know, I look at one thing about corporations. They don't die. They don't, you know, live a life and you bury them. They go on forever and ever.
Yeah, right? They're going to assist the government in finding him. You betcha.
And not only that, if they get into too much trouble, they'll just change their name.
Yeah.
Like from Blackwater to something else.
Right. And they employ people everywhere under many different corporations and operations throughout the world. This guy's not coming back. And if he has anything to fear, that's who he has to fear. Okay?
I think you're making a lot of sense, Joe.
But did you hear the interesting article about him? In 2009, he put out an article. He put out something himself, which he was talking about Manning and that kind of thing. And
he
said anybody who leaks information should be shot in the gonads, basically.
Yeah,
okay?
No, that was 2006.
No, 2009.
All right, maybe
because,
I got it.
Because it was after Manning. It was after Manning.
It originally came out.
But he said it in 2009. He said it in 2009.
John, you're correct. 2009.
Because it was after Manning. It was after Manning. And he said that they should be shot in the gonads for doing that, and he said he was against WikiLeaks. Now he's being paid by WikiLeaks on how to escape.
Bedfellows.
That's exactly what's happening. WikiLeaks admitted it as much.
Yes.
Okay, let me go ahead and invite some other folks in if they're folks, the number, we have another 25 minutes or so. The telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, it's 646-929-2495. Please push 1 if you want to talk. Just want to get a few more opinions. If you want to get in, just give us a call and we'll talk to you. Anyway, folks, I think we've probably covered all we can on the Snowden case. It is very, very serious.
Well,
now,
one last thing, if I could. One last thing.
Yes.
He is doing this for which he thinks, he's going to make a historical name for himself, okay? He is doing this because now he hates Obama, okay? He likes Ron Paul and the libertarian movement, you know, but he's a Ron Paul lover. And we got libertarians and firebagger liberals. I mean, they're great liberals because I'm a liberal, but we have firebagger liberals who go crazy on everything, and including this, and then which I want no part of, and then they free him or let him go, make sure he escapes and this and that. He did us a service. He did us a total disservice. And it's wrong.
Okay, John, I'm gonna end it with one thing because sometimes when your mind is just loose and doesn't have and you let it go, you wonder. And I sat down and I wondered. This guy was in a committed or somewhat committed relationship that he was going to be getting married. Do you think he just wanted a way out? I'm just leaving that there. I have no evidence, no proof, no nothing. I just thought about
that.
That he wanted out.
No. What happened was, I from what I understand, was that, this guy, you should. There was an article about him that he failed in high school. He only later got his GED. He dropped out of the military. He failed at getting his GED again. He wasn't that great of what, you know, he makes himself more than what he is. And he should have been a bagger at like a local food store, okay? I mean,
he had a $200,000 a year job.
He had a $200,000 a year job.
I know. But let me just say one thing, John. I have known I don't want to hit him up too hard on the GED and all of that because
But one thing about him was that he was losing. I think he lost this job or he was going to lose it. And that's why he decided to do what he had to do.
I got you. Let me just say one thing. I want to tell folks something, okay? Because I did this when I just started, and when they were putting the story out there, this was a highly paid guy. He didn't even
$200,000 a year job.
Right. He didn't finish high school and all that sort of thing, and all of that is good and well. I fell into the trap of saying, oh, we didn't finish school and all of that. Then I remember two things I remembered. I work with a young man here in Kingwood that the way he functions, he has no desire for higher education, but he's one of the smartest dudes, the most politically active, and understand a lot more. He's self-taught, a brilliant guy that used to do radio with me. Also,
does he make more than $15 an hour a job?
He could if he wanted to. But unlike
he doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
But this guy's getting $200,000 a year for doing what he did.
I hear you, my brother. I hear you. Let me finish what I wanted to say, though. And the other story that I have is when I just got into corporate America, I got there. I got done with my degree, and I went in there, and I was a senior software engineer. And there was this dude in there that barely finished high school, but he was the absolute best software developer in that entire unit. We actually did things like find neutron cross sections in oil wells and that sort of thing. And he was one of the best software developers there, bar none. And I learned a lot from him. So I kicked myself after my first reaction was, how can somebody that didn't even finish school go for that? I think we need to be a bit different than that.
They're trying to break down all the union jobs and a state like Texas and pay very little to people and pay them less than $15 an hour, right? And meanwhile, this guy, it just exposes the craziness of some kid who's under 30 who went job to job, didn't have a good education, got kicked out of the army, and $200,000 a year job. It shows you how inept we are.
John, I share your frustration, but I just don't want it to, I want it to be on the facts and not on that he didn't finish college or something like that.
No, but it shows you how inept our system is to dole this out to corporations.
I got you, my brother. Okay, we're almost done here. So I want to talk about immigration. I really wanted to read a piece of a blog that I did, but don't really have the time for that. The thing about it is, actually, it's important that I say this part. You see, everybody, how much do you guys know about what's in the immigration bill? Because it's an interesting thing that I discovered in the bill. And it had to do with I wrote a blog on it this week called Corporations Game Immigration Reform to Depress U.S. Wages. Okay, and that initially may sound like, oh, are you having second thoughts about us having to legalize these folks that are here? Absolutely not. But what I'm having problems with is a New York Times article that was written called, and folks, listen, go read this article. A bill allowing more foreign workers stirs a tech debate. And I want to read three paragraphs in that bill, and I'm going to read it real fast. And it said the following. Silicon Valley companies warning of – this is from the New York Times article. Silicon Valley companies warning of an acute labor shortage say it is too costly to retrain older workers like Mr. Doomberg, and the country is not producing enough younger Americans with the precise skills the industry needs. Their arguments have persuaded a majority of senators to give them what they want, a provision in immigration bill to let in many more foreign professionals. But Americans like Mr. Doan and the powerful labor lobby say that what the tech industry really wants is to depress wages and bring in more pliant, less costly temporary workers from overseas. If there is such a talent shortage, they ask why are wages for most engineers not rising faster? Supply and demand, right? Labor groups have pushed for a requirement to offer jobs to equally qualified Americans before hiring foreigners, and provisions that the industry has fiercely resisted. The pitched arguments of both sides, which are likely to resurface in the House when it takes up its version of immigration overhaul, cloud a complicated reality. There is little empirical evidence to suggest that foreign engineers displace American engineers. It's a silly statement, and I'll say why later, as a whole. If anything, one recent study suggests the growth of immigrant workers in American companies helps younger American technical workers, silly statement again, more of them are hired and at higher paying jobs. All of this shows us that the media is really run by the plutocracy, and I want to read my three-paragraph response real quickly. Within these three paragraphs is the encapsulation of U.S. purposefully failed policy, as U.S. corporations have used global capitalism to commoditize the American worker. These are statements that give the current economic condition and the request by these corporations plausibility. It is the request for Americans to forego simple mathematical facts by referring to corporate skewed empirical evidence. Corporations always attempt to use dubious market arguments when bribing politicians to write certain types of policies and simply disregard realities of said policies. If one believes in the market, it should be true that a shortage of skilled workers would raise their wages value high enough to induce people to enter those fields. The reality is that these highly skilled workers' wages are not going through the roof or increasing that much. The corporatists want their cake even after they've eaten it. How so? It's true that America is not producing enough highly skilled workers. It is also true that America as a whole has a failed education policy. The war industrial complex is always funded because America maintains an imagined sense of being at war. The prison industrial complex is always funded. America spends more per prisoner than per student. Yet, while it is acknowledged that there is a shortage of skilled workers, education budgets for Head Start, primary schools, secondary schools, junior colleges, and universities are cut by both the state governments and federal governments under the false premise that raising taxes on the corporations and wealthy would further damage the economy. That is a depression for many. So just all those are fallacies that I have given links to disprove. The above-mentioned article should not have been simply a statement of facts, empirical evidence, and skewed facts. That does no justice to the American reader. They deserve more. There needs to be an excoriation of the policies that are put in place by corporate purchase politicians that represent this plutocracy. It can be summarized in one paragraph as follows. Corporations have decided that profits for their few shareholders are more important than keeping a high standard of living for Americans who are willing to work for that high standard. They have created a false narrative that higher taxes depress an economy and bribe politicians to cut or keep taxes low at the expense of educating the citizenry and providing social services dictated by the creation of any humane society. When the foreseeable results of their actions create a shortage of skilled workers, they willfully forget their market force tenet of supply and demand that would ultimately cause higher wages to attract more American workers in those fields. Instead, they bribe politicians to use the resources of other countries to bring these foreign skilled workers into America at a discount. Every American should be for easy and fair immigration to America. The history of the United States dictates that its immigration policy should be as lenient as possible, lest it has not atoned for its original occupation of these lands. There should not be any special carve-out for skilled workers. America must train Americans, native-born and immigrants, for the American workforce. Corporations must pay for the vast American military, stability, security, and loyal workforce that allowed their existence. Americans must disregard the rhetoric of fear from these corporations who threaten job loss based on policy. They really have nowhere more secure to go. After all, without America, they do not exist. Comments, folks.
Bravo. That's Jimmy's comment.
Okay.
Excellent. Because I think you covered a vast array of the language mischief that seems to get used whenever subjects like this come up. I mean, of all the things that got through in the new bill, we've got this huge guest worker deal going on. We act as though every guest worker is a PhD in physics. But the truth is, a huge component of our immigration problem is that people come as guest workers and then get lost. You know, they have their two-year appointment at the meatpacking plant or at the building one of those McMansion neighborhoods or, you know, that kind of thing. And then as time goes away, all of a sudden they disappear. And it's where, to me, guest workers, the sort of carte blanche that we give this notion to guest workers, is one of our biggest immigration source or problem sources, totally. And that is business people bringing these people in and then abandoning them. They have to get a round trip ticket. You know, so it's
exactly.
Just crazy making. I'm not
agriculture.
Well, agriculture is one that's traditional for sure, but I promise you, we have entire subdivisions, we have entire cities rebuilt by guest workers here, and yet we have one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. And who's unemployed? The guys who are skilled craftsmen. So it's like, you tell me how that made any sense. All it did was bring in people who are willing to put 8 hours on a timesheet when they work 12. You know, and
right.
People for whom all kinds of employment law is broken and who will never speak up. And so I feel terrible that this whole guest worker thing gets brushed under like it's HP that needs guest workers, not the local meatpacking plant or not the local, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's crazy making.
Jimmy,
corporate personhood.
There you go. There you go.
We solve that. We remove the foundation to this mess. I'm telling you, that's it. I scream it loud every time you guys talk. We talk. It really boils everything we talk about winds up back in their lap, and it's because they're given the same kind of rights that our individuals have, and that is what that's how they get away with it. That's why the media is lying to us, because there's no fairness doctrine. You've heard me talk about that. You know, Dan Aronson makes a very good point on his show. One of the things he says that is very important is the value we get from our government, because there's nothing wrong with shrinking our government, but it's about value. All of that has to do with corporate personhood as well. We need to get that solved, and then Citizen United and all the rest of this stuff falls like dominoes.
I mean, yes, that is so true. Go ahead.
Jeanine.
Yeah.
Yes. Congressman Gutierrez was on Washington Journal this week. I'm up early. I get it. And it's live and it's a call-in. They got a real good show. He touched on just what you were saying about the workers disappearing. And if you look down in the South, according to him, they had restricted laws. ICE, I think it's called, was going, checking them. And the people that owned the businesses that these people were working for got on the phone with their congressman telling them to call them off, and they did. All right? One of the ways these people disappear is because of that. And then they'll turn around and blame the illegal immigrant, all right, for not having papers and being here illegally. It's like a double-edged sword. And this is a hope that the immigration bill will clean up. But
well, double-edged sword or rabbit trail. This is a rabbit trail. It's a deception.
Yes.
It's very clearly a business strategy, and it's a deceptive business strategy, because these same corporations don't want to pay for the social safety net that these folks fall into. You know, it is just making me crazy. They keep talking about prosecute, and they're talking about people that are here illegally. But I say prosecute the people who hired them. Prosecute the people who lost track
of
them.
And that's what Congressman Gutierrez said. That's exactly what he said. Look, I mean, I want a good immigration bill, but in all honesty, we're not going to get one. You're right about the smokescreen. Okay.
Let me tell you guys a personal story, a personal witness story. As you know, I'm in the construction business, and I'm sure we all know that in no other field, except maybe agriculture, are there more illegal immigrants working than there is in construction.
Exactly.
I'm building the Ocean Springs High School. I mean, I'm going to put this all on the table. I'm building the Ocean Springs High School in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. Now, one day, the ICE people come over, and in 5 minutes, now we're talking, I poured 7,000 yards of concrete. This is how big this high school is. It's a big horseshoe. It has, let's see, buildings A through K. It's so ridiculously overbuilt that they have precast concrete walkways across the horseshoe because I guess high school kids can't go downstairs anymore and go off the stairs on the other side of the building. Be that as it may, the huge site, big masonry package, big everything pack, everybody had a roofers, everybody. The ICE guy came to the site, and the site was a ghost town with the exception of the trades that actually do the work legally. Now, one of the things that I had to do is I had to, of course, show in fact that I was, and I have actually been a member of ICE since, I think, 2007, definitely by 2008, doing my due diligence on everybody that comes through and running every single person through the system. So I gave them all my paperwork, and we went back, we never left work. We just kept working. And I have a number of people who work for me that are of Spanish descent. So what I come to find out, now I'm paying attention. So what I come to find out, of course, is that in Mississippi, for example, they have made it an issue, especially in the north side. Now, I'm on the Gulf. But in northern Mississippi, because I'm getting ready to work in Starkville, where I'm working right now also, Starkville at Mississippi State University, I'm hearing that they're doing this to a high degree because in the northern Mississippi, they're actually trying to do that enforcement. But like Janine points out, what they are in fact doing, and I don't ever care. I'm going to go to the job. I'm a member of ICE. My guys are legal. What I'm seeing is exactly what Gene's talking about. They're going after the workers, and they're not going after the agency. Now, Mississippi will fine a business if they're caught. And Mississippi actually, and I am not a fan of Mississippi, but I am a fan of this in Mississippi. They actually now have created a law over there. They have expanded what they're doing with ICE, and they've actually put it across the board and are holding business accountable, at least on the books, for exactly the way it should be done, that they're fining businesses, they're removing their licensing. If you do a job for more than $50,000 in Mississippi, you have to be licensed as a contractor no matter where you're from. And they're actually prosecuting the businesses now the way they're supposed to be. And I totally agree that should be done because you know what else happened? It creates a level playing field for the businesses to compete because I'm in the low bid business. And I'm dealing with a contractor that I'm bidding against who I know for a fact is not paying his overhead, is not paying his payroll taxes, who was doing the cash thing. And it absolutely is affecting us, and they're getting away with it. And the customers and the counties and the states are turning a blind eye to it because it would be so simple to resolve. All they got to do is show up at the job sites and enforce it. Like they did
Yeah, don't you think that this is better? This is better than having a moat with man-eating fish. I mean, there's no way in the world, first of all, that it doesn't matter how many people you have, how many man-eating fish in a moat. Unless you write to the employers, unless it's right there, then it's never going to stop.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
Yep.
And Mississippi is doing it, and I give them props on that. From what I've seen, they've got everybody's attention, and I'm working in Mississippi because it's, again, created a level playing field. Now, here I am, a company that travels. So in order for me to have a playing field with that, for example, bid against companies who are local, I've got to be able to price my stuff accordingly. Well, if they're not paying all these other overhead, I'm never going to get the job. Mississippi
exactly.
is doing a good job, at least on the books, of enforcing it. And so it's doing what Janine is talking about. That's real important stuff, that what she's saying. Because, again, we're talking about the people with the money getting a pass to make money any day they want, and the people who are just trying to make money and feed their family, right, wrong, or indifferent, yes, they're breaking the law, 100%. But you need to – if you're going to prosecute somebody, prosecute them all. I don't want anybody to get a pass. Let's do everybody. And that's what the way it's supposed to be, free and equal.
I couldn't have said it any better, Bobby. You're so right. So we have a whole lot of stuff. But I am getting ready to shut down this show. Guess what we have today in uptown? Not uptown. I think it's in the what part of town is it? I forget. Montrose area. Today is the Gay Rights Parade, and the Kingwood area Democrats are going out there with banners and voter registration cards. So we'll be registering votes, registering people to vote. All of us are official voter registrars. I don't know if you guys know, but voter suppression in Texas is rampant. Now, to register voters in a particular county, you have to actually get trained, whatever they call training, in that county. So if you wanted to register in five adjacent counties, you have to go to five classes and get five different registration cards to say that you can register voters. Make it as difficult as possible. So anyway, I am going to start closing this baby down with a closing statement from Señor Rodrigo.
Is he there?
Yeah, Rodrigo's closing statement.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I had muted myself. Excellent show. Appreciate the time and the activism, and I look forward to the next day.
Señor Pomponio.
Great show, Egberto. We really got it mixed up today and covered a lot, right? Can't wait till next week, and we've got Press One for Democracy Monday night.
Thank you, sir. Let's see, Señor John.
This is a good show, and I think this 13-year thing that they want to have somebody, you know, to where they can become a citizen, that's an absurdity.
All right. And my dear Janine.
Hey, thanks, Egberto. Whenever I'm on your show, I always feel like I'm on one of those panels on the Sunday morning shows, and because the comments are great and diversity is good. And so thanks very much.
Thank you very much. You know, I would love to have you here every week because, like you said, we have so many points that we put out here. But, folks, thank you very much for spending a Saturday with me one more time. I really enjoy those that were on the show, and I enjoy those that are on the chat rooms, the comments that you're making. I don't always get a chance to answer them, but I read them, so thank you very much for being there. For those folks that are listeners, please share the podcast with your friends. Share the podcast all over. Please put it on your Facebook pages. That is how we make change. You know, remember, we have to be our own media now. We cannot expect our messages to get out there otherwise. So please share the show. Share all our shows. And let me give you a little bit about our shows. On Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern, we have Press One for Democracy with Dan Aronson. Great show. On Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, we have The Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric Beiler. Another great show. On Thursday, we have, see that lady you just heard there? Her show, Lunch with Loudon. I mean, it's a great show. You must call in. That's at 3 p.m. on Thursdays Eastern. Please call that show as well. And of course, Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 Central, you have Politics Done Right with yours truly. Look, our goal is to put out messages and not to simply complain, but to do something about them. We can only do so if we have your help, and your help can be in many forms. Being a part of our radio system and getting our message out, rebroadcasting, reposting messages that you get from our websites, from our chat rooms, from our Facebook pages. And also, please go to www.coffeepartyusa.com and become a sustaining member. Be a part of changing this country. We need the support. Remember all of the hosts that you hear here, we do this on a volunteer basis, but it does take money to be on the radio, it does take money to get our message out. It does take money to get our cameras out with our volunteers. So please, again, www.coffeepartyusa.com. Please become a sustaining member. Even $5 a month, a coffee, 2 coffees a month, 10 coffees a month. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm McBurdo Willis, Politics Done Right. Checking out.
Coffee party on.